Everybody, welcome to the Thursday morning coffee and football. I'm Bobby Burton, joined by Jerry Hamilton, sponsored by our friends at Austin Underground. Jerry, how you doing this morning, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I was off the road yesterday. We'll talk about a little bit of stuff later. So, gonna be back into chasing the recruits today on the road a little bit. But Texas coach is still on the road. I think we're up to, 43 official visitors locked in right now. I think that number will get up to about 47, 48 when it's all said and done. Good. It's been a good week so far, man. Got a golf major starting today. Softball starts today, I believe, right? So a lot going on. By the way, I'm happy to be wrong. I counted out the Dallas Mavs. I know there's Mavs fans on here when Minnesota was up 2-0. Mavs have stormed back to win three in a row, as has Denver. So for those Mavs fans, looks like it's going to be Luka versus Jokic unless one of those two teams collapses here at the end
in the Western Conference Finals. Absolutely. I think that, I'm not a big NBA fan. I've said that. But look, the guy that kills me in pro basketball today is the guy in Denver.
Yeah.
What a player.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like Dirk Nowitzki and a little bit of Kevin Durant. I mean, it's just bizarre how good he is.
He's the best basketball player I've ever seen that's a below average athlete.
Unbelievable.
He's got really good feet, but I'm just saying running, jumping. I mean, he looks like he's about to pass out every third trip down the court, but he is a great, great, great basketball player. And some people say, well, he doesn't play defense, but I'm going to go back to something Rick Barnes once said about TJ Ford, a couple of assistant coaches were saying, Rick, hey, we got to have TJ guard the best guy. We got to have him guard the best guy. And Rick Barnes said, you can't ask him to do everything for 40 minutes. You know, I mean, you can't ask a big man to run your offense. Essentially, everything runs through him on the perimeter in today's game, and be the best playmaker on that team. And then turn around and go guard in the ball screen game for 40 minutes. It's not going to work. What Denver does works, and Jokic is he's the best in the world at it. He's the best low average athlete I've ever seen play basketball.
So I always thought Larry Bird had like the most moxie of any basketball player I'd ever seen. Like, just, you know, to your point, below average athlete theoretically, like, can't run, jump. Like,
they wouldn't blow away the NBA combine. They wouldn't put up numbers at the combine.
Yeah. I'm not so sure this guy doesn't have as much or more moxie with his feet than Larry. I mean, it's freaky. He's kind of freaky to me. All right. Hey, we got some Longhorn stuff to go over today. As Jerry mentioned, Texas coaches on the road. Texas baseball team ends its regular season this week. They have a 3-game tilt with Kansas. That starts tonight at 6:30 over at the Dish. If you're in town, please. And the weather holds, by the way. It's supposed to be horrible weather in Texas today across the state. Texas softball team goes tomorrow. They take their number one national ranking to the task against Siena, which I do not think is supposed to be very good. But it's the first round of the NCAA tournament. That's going to be over at McCombs Field, again, for those people in Austin. That starts at 3 o'clock. The Texas One Fund. The University of Texas NIL collective of choice is expected to have a golf tournament tomorrow morning, as well as a fundraiser Saturday night with Brooks and Dunn highlighting that. So that's on tap. Jerry and I are going to talk a little recruiting today. We're also going to talk a question that I posed to the On Texas Football community on YouTube about who would be the most impactful mid-year transfer, or not mid-year, summer transfer from the portal. So I want y'all to think about that before we get into it. Obviously, the candidates, Silas Bolden, Bill Norton, the defensive lineman, Jermaine Lole, the defensive lineman, and Javion Cole, the defensive back from San Jose State. Those four guys coming in, along with, I think, four other high school guys. But I really want to focus on the portal guys today and have that conversation with Jerry, maybe get some of y'all's thoughts on the matter as well, and we'll go in that direction. Other news and notes, I want to mention this real quick. Texas right now sitting in a situation where they have seven verbal commitments for the class of 2025. The latest being Jackson Christian, offensive lineman out of Port Neches Grove that we reported on Monday. Longhorns, the next potential commitment that we're tracking right now, something could happen beforehand, is May 29th. That would be James Simon, the running back out of Shreveport's Calvary Baptist Academy. He's going to be making his decision, I think, live on YouTube on one channel or another. And then also, I wanted to mention this, and Jerry and I are going to talk about this as well. The June 1st Elite Camp is coming up, where Jerry has talked about Troy Hune and Dia Bell. The two quarterbacks will definitely be there. We think they are most in line for an offer potentially out of the gate for the Longhorns, not just for an offer, but actually a priority type situation for the Longhorns. That's coming up. That's more of the juniors, the class of 2026, maybe even some 2027s at that, Jerry.
Yeah.
As well.
And that'll be big. I mean, look, I think the two stud offensive linemen at IMG in 26 class are both scheduled to be there. John Turntine's definitely a possibility. Toa Katoa from ULIS. So a lot of those top guys are definitely possibilities. The IMG linemen, I believe, are scheduled to be there. I think a lot of the other guys will be there. I think the turnout for this elite camp is going to be even stronger than last year, obviously coming off the win over Bama, the college football playoff, and all the guys drafted. Texas just has more momentum now than they've been working with in recent years. So I think this turnout of 2026 is a few out-of-state guys as well, outside the IMG guys. We'll start reporting on that a little bit next week. That turnout's going to be really strong.
Yeah, should be. All right. We also have one other thing we want to get into. Our producer, Matt, did us a favor, Jerry, and created a graphic where everybody can see who all is visiting in the month of June. And we'll go over that together so that you can have a little comment and people can have a visual representation of who all's coming in this week as well. But let's get started first and say thank you to our sponsor. Our sponsor is Rick Vavro of the Austin Underground, folks. If you've had any commercial installations that you've needed, and I'm talking about difficult underground commercial installations, since 2004, Austin Underground has specialized in them. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider too risky. Rick and his team offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's our friends over at Austin Underground. We appreciate their sponsorship every Thursday morning of coffee and football. All right, Jerry, we talked a little bit about this. Texas coaches on the road yesterday. You said they were over to see Jonah Williams at Ball High, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I talked to a source close to that recruitment Wednesday evening. I posted all the notes on that on Texas football dot or on TexasFootball.com. So it was Blake Gideon and PK, from what I was told, were by Galveston Ball. Jonah Williams and a couple of family members met with those guys, as you can do now, once in January, once in the spring. And their discussion official visit date. Texas remains behind in that recruitment. I think A&M's obviously overtaken Oklahoma, and I've remained saying this. I mean, even when Oklahoma was, you know, the big leader, I said, you know, we'll see how these things play out because I think people in our industry run with the who's leading now a lot, but these things are very early, especially in January. Nobody in that family signed with an out-of-state college before. Just an FYI, the dad played football at Ball High and U of H. The brother was committed to Texas in A&M before signing pro baseball. The other brother, Seth, is at Galveston Community College, stayed home for JUCO baseball. But nobody's left the state. So will Jonah Williams be the first? Probably not. So that's where that's headed. But there is talk about the Texas official visit. The interesting, obviously, Texas gave them three official visit dates, June 7th, 9th, 14th, 16th, 21st through 23rd. Well, he's got A&M June 7th and 9th. That won't be rescheduled. LSU 14th through 16th, which is actually the first official visit he's scheduled. And then he's got Oregon on the 21st through 23rd. I was told that they're looking at a possible change there to get a Texas official visit. Texas has one midweek official visitor right now out of 43 or 44 that are locked in. That's Dijon Lee, the corner out of Mission Viejo. And that's one where Texas really had no choice. If you're going to get him on campus, everything else had been locked in June. So you have to get him on campus midweek. So we'll see what they do with Jonah and his family. But they're talking about scheduling a Texas official visit. But Texas has their ways behind in that one, in my opinion. Got but it. A lot can happen until July. But they're behind right now and have been.
Hey, happy birthday to Chance. I think we had another birthday on here, too, that I wanted to mention. Where was it? Where'd it go? Christopher Weatherford celebrating number 52 with OTF and some Starbucks Sumatra this morning. Good stuff there, Christopher, and thank you all for joining us. If you haven't checked in yet, let us know. Oh, hey, what about this, Jerry? I keep hearing Penn State is heading as leading for Dia Bell, so hopefully this event sways in Texas' favor. Why are people saying that? You were just down there last week and didn't get that sense.
No, well, so I think the ball's in Texas court on this. He really likes Alabama, but I don't think that Alabama is going to make that decision soon enough for Dia. Look, when I was down there last week, and it could have changed. I haven't talked to him in this week yet. I'll check in this weekend. Texas was the only June visit he had set at that time. June 1st elite camp. To me, the impression I got was if Sark went all in on Dia Bell, I think Texas would be the pick. But with Troy Hune out there, we'll see which way it goes. I do think from talking to people at American Heritage, Penn State might be more likely than LSU. Penn State and LSU sent both schools sent their OC QB coaches on the first day of the spring evaluation period. So those schools have left no doubt how badly they want Dia Bell. I think the thing there with all kids when you go through this process is, you know, you're sitting there and these kids know, okay, well, Texas has two guys that have offers. Which one of us is the one they're going to really push to commit and kind of get the 2026 class kick started. So I think that's what's going to be interesting there. I walked away from there thinking if Sark made the big push for Dia Bell, I think Texas would win out. But that remains to be seen what Texas is going to do. AJ Milwee is going to be at American Heritage May 20th, then in Mission Hills to see Troy Hune on May 22nd. So that's about a week, 10 days right before that elite camp. And that's the final time that AJ Milwee will watch those guys work out, throw in person before they come work out one last time for Steve Sarkisian. And I think, look, I've people have asked before, what do you think Texas will do? I mean, I do think it could come down to that day, those workouts a little bit, but that time spent with Steve Sarkisian that day and who he feels most comfortable with. But I'm always going to lean to the SoCal quarterback until proven wrong. I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, Sark definitely has a proclivity towards – and he's had success with him. So why wouldn't he?
Right.
I mean, you know, that's one of those things, Jerry, that you have to think about. Hey, one of the questions I said that we were going to go over today, Jerry, if we had an opportunity to, was the community poll on Texas football's basically our webpage on the web on the YouTube page. I asked users and folks who would be the most impactful players or the most impactful transfer portal guy for this season of the guys that were coming in this summer. Okay, Silas Bolden, Bill Norton, Jermaine Lole, and Javion Cole. Those are the four that I've got that were the possible answers, right?
Yeah.
Who do you think won that poll? I mean, I'm going to start there with you.
Oh, Javion Cole. Because the loss of Terrence Brooks and there's potentially a starting spot at corner wide open. So Javion Cole. And then, you know, it's interesting that somebody said on paper it's Javion Cole, but then it's actually going to be the D lineman. I tend to agree with the person that said that. Javion Cole may play the most snaps of these four guys, in my opinion, next year. But is Bill Norton and Olole just as important as Cole? Probably. And I'm not slighting Silas Bolden, man. I think Silas Bolden's tremendous, but he's also coming in with Isaiah Bond, Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore. There's a lot of guys there. So he's going to have his spot on the team and be a tremendous player. But his role in the Michigan game may not impact winning as much as Norton, Lole, and Cole. I guess that's kind of the way I'm looking at this, especially early in the season. I think Cole's the most likely to start of the four, but Norton and Lole, watch out for Lole. If he comes on a little bit more than what he did at Louisville last year, coming off the two injury plagued years, if he stays healthy enough and he improves on last year, I think he has a chance to be a true impact player. Bill Norton's going to have his role. Lole is more of a playmaker.
This is interesting to me because you think Cole is actually most likely to start of this group of four.
I think his path is probably the best.
I think one of the two defensive tackles' path is actually the best. Because I do believe Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton are both three techniques and not over the ball. And now I'm not saying Lole is anything more than that, but Bill Norton has more snaps over the ball than anybody else on the roster.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. That's pretty telling right now. My take on this is we don't know yet whether or not Javion Cole is going to be better than Gavin Holmes, right? We don't know if Bill Norton or Lole is going to be better than Broughton or Collins or even Tia Savea, right? Silas Bolden is probably the most proven out of all those guys, yet wasn't the pick. The fans.
He's got going for him on a poll like this. If you look at impact on a team, punt return, kick return even, and wide receiver. He's got more options to be in. Look, he could score a touchdown on the punt return against Michigan and win the game, right? I mean, so he may not play the most snaps necessarily, but he could have the game most impactful play in the game. So Silas has the most opportunities to be impactful for me.
It's interesting because here's Zane Petty. He just mentioned that, right? My bold prediction is Silas Bolden takes two punts to the house this season. David Keith Williams had this one. Bill Norton will probably be the starting nose tackle for Texas. I think he needs to be the most impactful Texas transfer. I don't know. I had a real problem with this, and that's why I put the poll up.
Yeah.
I do think Cole is likely to start over Gavin Holmes, but I wouldn't put that as a definitive piece. By the way, if you're listening on podcast or on Twitter right now, it is actually the poll was 41% for Javion Cole, 28% for Silas Bolden, 20% for Bill Norton, and 11% for Jermaine Lole.
The other thing is the corner opposite Manny Muhammad is going to be attacked this year. So whoever that is, but it's going to have to be impactful.
Yeah, I get it. I'd love to hear what other people have to think about that talk about it a little bit more because I do believe it's an interesting question. And the reason I say that again is I don't know who's going to break through of that group. I mean, you'd like one or two of them to break through for sure. It could be all four. I mean, it's one of those situations we're going to have to see how they fit. In the last piece of it, Jerry. All right, hey Jerry, I gotta say this: you're getting ready to go on the road, so we're gonna do a little segment here of on the road with South Point Dodge. You get it going, bud.
Yeah, hey Texas football fans, score an easy extra point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock. And their award-winning sales staff doesn't do games or gimmicks. They just get straight to the point by getting you the very best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. Come see us off I-35 in South Austin or at southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge.
All right, good stuff, Jerry. Talking about being on the road with South Point Dodge, where are you going today? What's your tap for the next 2 days, actually? As you get back on the road, seeing recruits.
Yeah, so I'm going to be bouncing around in the Houston area today. May rip over the A-Leaf Hastings. May go to the K&E. May go see Caleb Chester at Fort Bend Marshall. I think I'll be at two of those three places today. It's hard to work all three in from a time perspective, but I plan to hit a couple of those places today and do some video interviews with those guys here for On Texas Football and just kind of get the latest on their recruitments. And then we'll see next week. I think I may be going up into the DFW area for a couple of spring games there right before the end of the school year. And by the way, I failed to mention this when we're talking about Texas coaches on the road earlier. Coach Cromedy at Jasper put out a photo. Jeff Banks was by Jasper High yesterday as well. Keone Armstrong, the four-star tight end at Jasper. A&M Texas battle with LSU and Auburn Shrine, but really A&M Texas battle there right now. But Jeff Banks was out and about yesterday. He was by Decaney recently, also by Jasper. He's been out to California to see Caleb Edwards. He's been to Georgia to see Amari Winston, obviously. So he's seen his four top tight end targets now this spring, as well as going out to see a lot of guys nationally that he's helping out on in recruiting, like Myron Charles, Dallas Wilson, some of those guys in Florida and around the country.
Jerry, I was asked if there's a – like who one of my favorite freaks of the football season is as far as a height, weight, speed, athleticism situation is on TexasFootball.com yesterday. My response actually was a tight end, Nick Townsend.
Yeah.
Of all the guys I've seen, I mean, he may be the guy that has the biggest height, weight, speed combo of anybody out there. And I'm not just talking about in Texas.
Yeah. I mean,
He's fast and big. What does it look like at tight end right now for Texas recruiting? Because Amari Winston's committed. Do we think that commitment sticks? Texas clearly recruiting other guys too. What are your thoughts there?
Yes, I'm with you on Nick Townsend. I mean, look, he's 6'3", 226. He was 226 pounds when he ran a 10.92 FAT 100 at district meet. Go find how many tight ends in the country are doing that. Then you turn around and when he plays outside linebacker edge, he's a top 100 prospect in the country doing that too. But he wants to be a tight end. So all the schools that are, see him as a tight end or recruiting him as a tight end. That's Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, which is the competition for everybody. That's Jeff Banks at Texas. That's Texas A&M. He already made an official to Arizona State. Notre Dame and Ole Miss are trying to get him up on campus as well. But I really think he'll play in the SEC. I think it'll come down to Alabama, Texas, maybe Texas A&M there. But I'm with you, Bobby. I mean, he's I can't say he's a super freak, but he's in the freak category at that position, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it remains to be seen if what he looks like after the catch in space, making people miss at the power four level. But as far as 6'3", 235, going to be running in the low four, in the high 4.5 range, a year into a college program, maybe mid 4.5 range. I'm not saying he's going to look like Amari Nyblack and look like a wide receiver necessarily after the catch, but he's going to look big and fast. And there just aren't many of those guys. But it's going to be interesting to see. I think so. Him and Amari Winston are more of the guys that you can do more with at the tight end position. You can flex them out. You can use them as a pseudo receiver at times, kind of like Nick Townsend, very much like like JT Sanders, but obviously a higher end athlete. Then Keone Armstrong and Caleb Edwards out of California, El Dorado Hills. There, I think it's Oak Ridge School, Oak Ridge High. He goes to. Those are the bigger tight ends. I mean, Caleb Edwards is bigger. I think he's not as athletic as Keone Armstrong is, maybe not as smooth of a mover as Armstrong is, but those are your two bigger body, bigger frame tight ends. The guys that, I mean, Keone Armstrong's gonna be 6'5", 260, running in the high 4.6s, probably 4.7 range. Edwards is a smaller frame right now, but he's going to be a 255, 260 pound guy, where I think a Nick Townsend's going to be your 6'3 and a half, 240 pound tight end that can absolutely fly. And those three guys have better frames, bigger frames naturally than Winston. Amari didn't have the longest arms out there at his height, but he's a really good pass catcher, makes plays in traffic. So I think Texas is, they're going to sign two tight ends. It's going to be two of the four. It'll be interesting to see which way that goes in June.
Got it. All right. Jerry, I'm thinking about this and trying to figure all of this out as it relates to Texas. And you said earlier 43 official visitors for the Longhorns ready to go in the month of June.
Yeah,
43. You know, break down the weekends a little bit, if you would, from a numbers perspective, so people have a sense of what's getting ready to happen in June. Like, because I think that the second and third weekend are definitely heavier than the first weekend in June.
Yeah, that 7th through 9th weekend, I mean, the key guys to know there, the Caleb Edwards, a tight end from California, then Caleb Chester, the corner from Fort Bend Marshall, then Dorian Brew from Connor, Ohio's 7th through 9th. So Texas get – and they had a couple other DBs scheduled or looking at scheduling there. Obviously, they didn't go – they didn't make a strong push for Cortland Guillory. He committed to Oklahoma. That means he's not a good player. You can't push for everybody. You got to make choices here. Yeah, so Texas has had some DBs that were scheduled on that 7th through 9th week, and they'd love to get Adonis Curry out of Cortil in Lancaster, California, and in June, too, another kid from California they're still making a push for there. So it's going to be the corners. It's going to be Caleb Edwards. And then, you know, that June 12th, the only midweek visitor right now, as I mentioned earlier, is Dejon Lee, the corner out of Mission Viejo, the 6'3 corner. And Texas had to do that to get him on campus. He already had Washington. He's got Georgia. He's got Alabama. And I believe he's got Oregon as well. So he already had that full June schedule. So for Texas to get him on campus, they had to take a midweek shot at him. That tells you how much they think about him, because Sark's not big on the midweek visits. He didn't have one last year in June. They canceled Ty Anthony Smith's midweek visit, in fact, at the time. So Sark getting big on the midweek visits. He wants that full weekend experience in Austin. And around the University of Texas. But to get Dejon Lee, they had to go that route. 14th through 16th has a number of guys coming in. Ricky Stewart, obviously running back commitments coming in there. Kelshawn Johnson, there you see Kelshawn Johnson. Andrew Marsh, Daylon McCutcheon. I think obviously Kelshawn Johnson's the top receiver target amongst that group. And this list is all on TexasFootball.com. If you want to see the complete visitor list for all these guys, Nick Brooks. Interesting. I'm telling you, Texas is making a little move there. Georgia's the perceived leader, but Texas is very much in that. I don't think he goes to Iowa. They'll take their last shot. I think USC's behind Texas. Georgia, we'll see what happens there. If Juan Gaston from Westlake, who I took off this visitor list, if he commits to Georgia that weekend, we'll see what happens with Nick Brooks. Lamont Rogers coming in June 14th through 16th. John Mills, I think that'll be his final visit. I think Texas leads there. Then you have Brandon Brown, Myron Charles, the big Florida defensive line guys, Josiah Sharma out of Folsom. I mean, that's three of the very best D linemen in the country on that. And there's Kevin Wynn, four of the very best D linemen in the country. And then the edge guys coming in that weekend. Now, Hayden Lowe, there's people on the West Coast think he could be a first-round pick one day. They think he could be better than Kayvon Thibodeau. That's not me saying it. That's people on the West Coast, to be clear. Lance Jackson, who may end up being a five-star prospect. There aren't many 6'6", 260s that run like that, and certainly throw 95 off the mound. Smith Orogbo, well, one of your favorites, Bobby, one of the maybe the best pure quickness edge rusher Texas is recruiting. Then there's Riley Pettijohn, Texas leads for. Jonathan Cunningham, North Crowley, a guy that Johnny Nansen really liked at Arizona, came in, pushed Sark to offer, and they offered. So that's the June 14th to 16th list. You see there, it's loaded. And June 21st through 23rd, I mean, it's super, super loaded. I mean, KJ Lacy, James Simon, who commits May 29th, Jamie French, who's fantastic. Then Kalik Lockett, and then you have Marcus Harris. I think DeCorian Moore will eventually be on this list. He could be the 14th through 16th. It has been trending to the 21st through 23rd. Then Amari Winston, Nick Townsend, Keyote Armstrong, we talked about. Michael Fasusi, five-star offensive tackle. Jackson Christian, who's now Texas commitment. Tyler Thomas, who looks very good this spring, guys. He's going to end up at A&M Texas or LSU, and he's come off the foot surgery really well. Then the Colemans, Jordan Coleman, offensive right tackle guard. Devin Coleman, center, interior lineman. Then you have D lineman. Derry Norris hadn't fully locked that in, but that's what it's looking like. Zion Williams, Derry Norris, DJ Sanders. DJ Sanders, the developmental guy, that he's going to need the most time out of this whole D-line group. Damian Shanklin may not be coming in anymore. I'm trying to get confirmation on that. They scheduled Marco Jones. Obviously, you have Elijah Barnes committed, one of the very best linebackers in the country. And then you have the California guys. We'll see if Tagoi committed to USC, makes it in. Who's not on this list, who should be on this list, is obviously Madden Ferramo, who's been the linebacker from J. Sarah Catholic, who's been added. Then there's Kate Phillips, Aiden Anning, who I love at corner. Then Texas has taken a swing at Devin Williams, who's an Auburn commitment. We'll see if Auburn lets him get out of that visit and still make the visit to Texas. That's what Auburn will be battling against. They don't want him visiting Texas. So that's a list right now. There's going to be two or three guys added to that. DeCorian Moore hadn't announced his dates. Obviously, he's coming in. We'll see what Texas does at quarterback. I mean, could Keelan Russell come in late June? We'll see on that as well. So I think we'll see three, four more guys added to that list. I think we'll end up close to 48, 50 official visitors in June.
Hey, Jerry, someone asked on here earlier about whether or not there's any movement on Texas taking two quarterbacks in this class. What have you heard exactly as it relates to that? I mean, I know that right now the plan isn't to do that, but, you know, is there any possibility that Texas would move in that direction? What are the thoughts?
They're not saying they are. So that's the key thing is both quarterbacks are under KJ Lacy and Keelan Russell, who AJ Milwe went to see last week. He was at Saraland Monday. They're not under the impression Texas is taking two quarterbacks in the class. And I don't think that's realistic, honestly. I mean, and by the way, you wouldn't get two of that level in a class. Those days are over in NIL. That's just not happening anymore. But I think one quarterback class is what it's going to be. And you're not going to sit there and try to take two quarterbacks and in a week and a half try to commit a 2026. I just don't think it's happening. I think Texas will have one quarterback in the 25 class and one in the 26 class.
Okay, good stuff. All right, we got some super chats to get to. We got some other things going on. First, I want to circle back to that discussion we had, Jerry, about which transfer portal member coming in this summer would have the most impact. We got some more answers as I asked for them. Let's go with this Leon Gongre, from a rotational standpoint and need, I would say Bill Norton, Brandon Huey, Silas Bolden, hands down. Phil McIntosh, I go Norton, but I don't know enough about Brooks to know how much he might have been giving up at cornerback. And talking about JV and Cole, Bobby Petronic says Bolden, and it's not close as well. Chris Weatherford says, if defensive line successfully stops the run, then Cole will be the key cog behind him. Mark Valdez, Bill Norton, power, run stopper, et cetera. So a lot of different comments there. Interestingly, we didn't hear much about Jermaine Lole. I'm not so sure he's not more talented. He's healthy. Yeah. Than Bill Norton. Now, the question is if he's as healthy as he needs to be an elite performer.
Well, look, before the injury set in, he was easily the best player of the four. And that's not a knock on the other guys. I mean, Lole, his sophomore year at Arizona State, by the way, recruited by Antonio Pierce and Herm Edwards, who do know what NFL players look like, by the way. They also recruited Jalen Daniels and a few others. But Ricky Pearsall, obviously, who transferred to Florida after all the stuff went down to Arizona State. I mean, Antonio Pierce and Herm, they know what it looks like, okay? Lole was firmly on NFL draft boards after his sophomore year when he had 71 tackles, 6.5 sacks. I mean, just think about the numbers he put up, and people say it's Pac-12, fine, but he still whipped a lot of butt out there. And he was on the NFL draft boards and pretty high until the triceps, the elbow, the knee meniscus. Last year he came back and he played about 400 snaps. I think CJ put that out, 400 snaps, right around there, 380, 390. If he plays 400 snaps as a more confident, another year removed from those injuries player, if he gave you 30 tackles and 4 sacks this year, he's a difference maker. I mean, that's what's going to be interesting. I think he's kind of – Texas fans are brushing him off because of health, and I totally get it because it's more like, oh, let's see what he does. Let's see if this guy can stay healthy two straight years after missing 2 years of football, essentially 2.5 years of football. But if he actually can build off of last year and stay healthy, that guy's a really talented player.
Got it. Hey, by the way, you know, UT boy has to say, don't sleep on Jonte. Jonte wasn't part of the question there, though.
Jonte's part of every UT boy question, though.
I love that. All right, here we go. Jack Lala. Bobby, Jerry, I hear all the time that we might have as many as 6 OL go in the draft. But don't we actually have more DL possibilities if they each meet their potential?
If you combine edge and interior.
Yes, but here's the difference, Jack. The guys that are going to get drafted on the offensive line are probably higher rated prospects and older. And so what I mean by that is Kelvin Banks, Cam Williams, DJ Campbell, they're already juniors, right? Jake Majors is a senior. On the defensive line, you have, of the elder statesmen, you have Baron Sorrell and Trey Moore right now.
Yeah.
Ethan Burke is just a true junior. You worry about that. Alfred Collins might get drafted in the mid to late rounds at this point unless he comes on and has a miraculous year. So I think that there's a perception out there that maybe the top-end talent, it's not just the numbers, but the top-end talent is better on the offensive line, at least from the older players, not right. necessarily from the younger players.
Well, I mean, look.
Colin Simmons and Zena Umeoluolu sitting back there as true freshmen, that both look really, really good this year.
Yeah, let's just throw this out. There's some thought in Austin that Cameron Williams could be a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Texas legitimately could have both tackles as first-round picks. I mean, when's the last time that happened at Texas? Leonard Davis and Mike Williams, I'm guessing, in back-to-back years, right, Bobby? Would that be the last time? And Mike Williams is more of a guard in the NFL, I think. Look, it's been a while since you could say that. And what could DJ Campbell do with a much improved sophomore year in pass pro? Game slows down for him because you know what he's going to do in the run game. So, I mean, Texas has some high draft pick potential guys, and that's what they have on the offensive line. Edge position certainly have that as well. So, I think it's a coin flip for me because the edge position has been built out so well, especially in this last class with Trey Moore and Colin Simmons. But if you're looking about the immediate NFL draft, look, if Cameron Williams has a really good year, he may not be back for a second year starting.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, look,
he should start 2 years, but it doesn't mean he will. Look at Amarius Mims at Georgia. Somebody brought that up in the chat earlier this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if that happens, so great for him.
Good for him and good for Texas.
Yeah, exactly. That Texas has to – that's Steve Sarkisian's job is to go out and find the next guy, right? But you got to hand it to a guy, a young man that, frankly, you know, we'll see where it goes this year. And if Texas has – and somebody mentioned this. If Texas has two guys like that, they probably had a really, really good football season.
Exactly. Just what we said last year, right?
Yep.
If Worthy and all these guys end up leaving a year early, Texas had a great year on the field. And they really did. I mean, then Byron Murphy went beyond what anybody thought. If Cam Williams goes beyond, if he does a Byron Murphy this year, Texas.
He's the guy you're looking at that probably has the most upside of coming out of nowhere, so to speak.
Right? I've said this before, Bobby, and here, I'm always going to remember this for some – it just stuck out in my head. I was at the Summer Creek Atascocita game. Kelvin Banks' senior year. And Kelvin Banks was still committed to Oregon at the time. And Mario Cristobal was there with his offensive line coach, who's about 5'4", 150. It's pretty funny. He's his offensive line coach. Really good coach. Just Alex Mirabal just doesn't look fit the offensive line coach mold. And I was having a conversation because Cristobal actually asked about Jermaine Tapp. They thought he was really good. And he said, hey, who do you think has the highest upside, Cam Williams or Kelvin Banks? And I kind of did a double take when he asked the question because I was like, that's an interesting question to ask. Because you're only asking that question if you and your offensive line coach wonder if Cameron Williams actually is the highest upside guy when they're 28, 29 years old. That was such an interesting question to be asked standing on the sidelines because Kelvin Banks is a five-star recruit. And at the time, Cam Williams – we had pushed him up at on three, but he was a top. He was around a high three star or right at four star. But for them to say, "Who do you think has the highest upside?" I was like, I guess y'all kind of told me what y'all were wondering. They thought it was close. So yeah. There you go. Let's see how close it ends up being.
Kelvin Banks. The difference with Kelvin Banks is he matured so quickly, so mentally matured.
Yeah, and Kenny Harrison did a great job with him at Summer Creek. Great job.
He just took on a different level of maturity early in his career. I remember the comments coming in when he first got there, Jerry. It's like, look, he's acting like a you know, a fourth year senior right now.
He's a professional
room and how he's approaching the game, all that stuff. He just was mentally that much further along in my
by opinion. The way, same things we think and hear about Manny Muhammad.
Yeah, exactly.
Shook ones, I want to answer this. Gut feeling, are we landing Jamie French? I can't go there until the June official visits happen. Look, the process for a lot of these guys really kicks in June. And I'm talking the NIL part of the recruitment, right? So I think Texas has a great shot to land Jamie French? I do. I walked away from Mandarin thinking that. I think it could come down to Texas and Tennessee. He says, I'm going to make an official visit to Ohio State in the fall. You know, Colin Simmons said the same thing. It never happened. Ohio State's fallen off with French. I think the mom really likes Texas. Miami's going to make a big run, though. You know that's coming in June, but is that a place he actually wants to be? Or, you know, is that not the place he wants to be is the question. I think Texas has a better than 50-50 shot. But in the NIL day and age, we have to let these things play out. I mean, just think about this. When I sit here and say, okay, I think Texas is leading for Jamie French. 2 months ago, it was done deal for Ohio State with him. In January, Jonah Williams, done deal, was going to Oklahoma. All the picks were in. Jonah Williams isn't going to Oklahoma right now. Jamie French isn't going to Ohio State right now. So I'm big on, yeah, Texas is in a good spot. But the pressure-packed part of these NIL recruitments are just now going to start in June. So let's see what happens. But I think Texas is in a good spot. And I think French and his mom really like Texas. It's legitimate.
Speaking of a good spot, it's time for Jerry Hamilton to do his thing.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, it's I always have it with me. And the Lawnmower 5.0, it's always with me, guys. Or, you know, the handyman on the road, right, when you're on the road. Hey there, beach babes. Are you ready to soak up those summer vibes and unveil your ultimate beach bod? I know some of you are. Well, you're in luck because our friends at Manscaped have you covered from head to toe with the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra. This ultimate all-in-one grooming kit is set to have you looking and feeling your best in the summer sun. And man, is it getting hot. Trust Manscaped and unlock the confidence you need to turn heads this season. Join the 10 million men plus worldwide who trust Manscaped, manscaped.com. Head over there for 20% off plus free shipping with code ONTEXAS, all caps. Let's make this summer your smoothest one yet. And look, two important things with your Manscaped and your summer beach bod. For those sunny beach days, don't leave home without the crop preserver, the anti-chafing ball deodorant. You got to have that. You have to. Let the sun see you shine, not sweat. And look, there's also the Magic Mat disposable shaving mat. Got your back and your front and everything else that needs grooming, because we know it all does. It's like having a magician in your bathroom. And I'll tell you this. I'll tell you who's not using Manscaped. Dabo Sweeney. He had 22 transfers this year, meaning high school recruits. Come on, get out of here with that.
Hey, I'm playing golf tomorrow morning.
FSU, man, they need. I didn't take anybody out of the portal.
I may need that deodorant, man. Golf in Texas in mid-May could be a little hot in the morning. All right,
Bob, I think you missed those comments. Dabo said yesterday, I had 22 transfers, high school guys. I mean, look, I'll say this: there was a list. I think CBS Sports put out a list of the top 25 head coaches headed into the season. Sark was 5. I think it was Kirby 1, Ryan Day 2, Dabo 3. Kalen DeBoer was 7, so that was a little low for me. But it was interesting. You know, Ryan Day probably has the most pressure on him this season because he's number 2. And if he doesn't get to a national title game this year, Ohio State fans are going to be ready to push him off to another job. That's just the reality. It's a huge year for Dabo on the field this year because he is locked in and he is as hard-headed as ever about the portal. And if he slips a little bit more this year, then people are going to – I think Clemson fans for the first time will truly start saying, hey, man, I mean, we're paying you $12 million a year, but you're not adapting to college football like Nick Saban did, like Kirby Smart is, like Steve Sarkisian is.
I'm interested in this.
That pressure from the Clemson fans if it doesn't go great this year for the first.
The question I have for Dabo Sweeney is he Mac Brown? And I shouldn't say is he just Mac Brown, because Mac was the best coach that Texas has had in the last 30 years. So it's not a knock. It's just he needed freaky players to win big. That's nothing wrong with that. I mean, most teams need freaky players. Most coaches do. But Dabo having Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson back-to-back was somewhat similar to Texas having Vince Young and Colt McCoy back-to-back, right? And then what about what happens without those two, right? And where is Clemson without those? You know, 8-4, 8-5, 9-3.
Yeah.
In a league that's not that tough right now.
Yeah.
Not unlike where Mac was at times. So we'll see where that is. I would say the one that's on that list, and Matt, our producer, if you'll bring that list back up, if you don't mind. I feel like the one that doesn't get enough credit in this list is, you know, no offense, but it's probably Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, he took over a Washington program that Jimmy Lake had left some talent, but had kind of run it into the ground after Chris Peterson built it up, and immediately takes them to, you know, two 10 plus win seasons in place for a national championship. Brian Kelly, I don't understand why Ryan Day is number two. That makes no, unless they're looking forward to this year. I mean, even 5 for Sark is kind of high. I mean, in my opinion, based on his wins, right?
Yeah, look, I mean, if I was making a list, the question is all with all these lists, is it Kirby and Dabo, because they both have multiple national titles? Does it start there and then you just go from there? That's the argument people always make with these lists. But, yeah, I mean, look, if it was me, I'd have DeBoer 2 or 3. I mean, you just can't. You can't ignore what that guy has done as a coach. And I say this, I know Texas fans don't like some of it, but you go to Indiana as an OC after look, I don't care where you coach. If you go 67-1 and win 3 out of 4 national titles, Jim Tressel did the same thing. There's been a lot of guys. Brian Kelly, smaller schools, didn't work his way up, right? But then you go to Indiana, best season they've had. That coach is, then you get the Fresno job. The coach at Indiana hangs on, then he gets fired. You go to Fresno, your first year's COVID year, that doesn't really count. Then you have 9 wins immediate success. Then you go to Washington, 11 wins, and then playing a national title. I mean, that is very high heady stuff that he's done. That means whatever you do works everywhere you go at a very high level. I mean, and he's going to win it. He's going to win at Alabama. The question is, if you go 9-3, are they going to hate you in year one?
Yeah,
that's the problem at Alabama. But look, I'll say the same thing. On this chat, we have 9-3 as a big disappointment for Texas this year. I mean, so that's the world you live in. Obviously, now you follow Nick Saban, it's a little bit of a different world you live in at Alabama. But that also shows you how confident he is that he jumped at the opportunity. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, he had 10 million reasons to jump at that opportunity. All right, here's a question coming from the chat here from Jay Lee. Thoughts on the 2018 wide receiver group, Little Jordan Humphrey, Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, versus the 23 wide receiver group, Mitchell, Worthy, Whittington. The 18 group actually had more yards in 18 than 23.
Yeah,
but Texas had a more balanced offense, and Texas also had Jatavion Sanders.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the wide receiver group. It was, quote unquote, the receiver group, in my opinion. While I think Little Jordan, Colin, and Duvernay were all good players for the Longhorns, Duvernay probably the best overall, although I think Little Jordan was really good too. you look at it, I don't think either of them were as highly drafted as either Mitchell or Worthy or had that speed. Now, Duvernay had the speed.
Yeah.
Duvernay's role is actually much more like Jordan Whittington's until his senior year when Duvernay became a focal point.
And Duvernay had the – I'll say this. Duvernay had the best hands of this group. I mean, we'll say that.
Question.
I mean, yeah, that guy's got a great set of mitts now. It's interesting. Obviously, talent-wise, not even close. Production-wise, different. But like you said, there's the Tavion Sanders and how important the tight end is in the offense for Steve Sarkisian. And it's not even just that. You had Gunnar Helm. So how many catches did that put at the tight end group versus the 2018 group?
Yeah. I get it. More yards, all that other stuff. You know, my take on it is Texas was a better team last year, in part because they had such good receivers.
Yeah.
And elite receivers. While Humphrey and Colin Johnson and Duvernay were really good, I never considered them elite receivers. So just think of it that way. You know what I mean? That's where it's at for that. All right. I want to say thank you to our sponsor on Friday or on Thursday's Coffee and Football. Since 2004, Austin Underground has specialized in difficult underground commercial installations. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider just too risky. Rick Vavro and his team offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's our friends over at Austin Underground. Jerry, recapping a little bit that we went over today early, Texas baseball has its season-ending series begin today against Kansas over at the Dish at 6:30. Texas softball, number one ranked women, playing against Siena in the first round of the NCAA tournament tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Texas One Fund has a golf scramble tomorrow morning and then a big fundraiser where Brooks and Dunn are going to be the headliners on Saturday night at DKR. Very interesting stuff there. We've also talked about the most impactful transfer coming in at midterm, where we continue to get some answers that are interesting here. Not many people mentioning Lole. And I would say that usually the crowd is either really on or really off. Let's see if he outperforms maybe some expectations there. All right, let's go for this. Who's our perennial dog recruit this year? Hill and Simmons? Who's next? I don't know if is Simmons the dog recruit or is that Wingo? I mean, you know.
I think the kind of the must-get guy, the kind of the guy that was, the true guy. And a lot of
times. Mark Manning was the same year as Anthony Hill now.
Right. No doubt. So let's say in-state. I mean, look, a lot of people will talk Fasusi, and I get it, but there's also Turntine in 26, and I think Turntine might be the best offensive – he's the best offensive line prospect in the state for me in any class, and was last year. He may have been –
isn't it DeCorian Moore?
100%. 100%. Look, it's – I had this discussion with a high school coach earlier this week who watched the regional track meet in Waco and has actually watched this our shows before. And when I called him a super freak, he was like, you're right. And I was like, yeah, I don't throw that term out very often. Like, the Corey Moore's a super freak. I mean, who qualifies for state in four events, whether they're relays or not, four events as a junior in 6A? I mean, look, and he ran, you know, and the only reason it wasn't five is he get fourth? In the 100, I mean, 10, 4, 5 didn't get you the state in that region, okay? So you're looking at a guy who, if he – these kids don't stick around for their senior year. And so track takes a hit because it, very rare is a Caden Durham actually around for senior year track. So DeCorey Moore is going to – this was his last year track. But let's just say he stayed for his spring of his senior year. I mean, he run 10-3 at 182, 183 pounds. But it's not just that, right? It's 24 long jump. It's the fast, quick, explosive top end. When he can go win a 50-50 ball, he's good after the catch. He has it all. He's a super freak guy. I mean, the only thing he may not have, he's not 6'2", but that's okay because he's got everything else in spades. I mean, I think he's a great, great prospect.
Got it. Jay Lee wanted to make sure we clarified something. He asked that because I saw people online ranking Texas wide receivers groups, and no one gave that 18 group any respect. If that's the case, then I get it.
That 18 group should get some respect, and here's why. That maybe the best 50-50 ball winner Texas has had in a long time in Colin Johnson. Maybe the best hands of anybody that Texas has had in Devin Duvernay. And Lil Jordan Humphrey was good after the catch. Now, they didn't have as fast as Devin Duvernay is. He's been on the show before, and I love him. I had him in the Under Armour game. As fast as Devin Duvernay is, I'm not sure it was DeCorian Moore football speed where you're just like, oh, geez, if you're a D coordinator, right? It wasn't necessarily like that all the time. He had it in him. Maybe it's he didn't play in Sark's offense. Maybe if he played in Sark's offense, it would have looked a lot different, and that's probably the case. But they had a guy that – they had receivers on that team that had a great 50-50 ball winner and a back shoulder guy you could go to any point in time. Now, he wasn't going to run away from people, but you could throw the ball to a point, and there was a good chance he was going to get it. Devin Duvernay, great hands and did have speed. Lil Jordan Humphrey, really, really good after the catch with size. So that receiver group had a little bit of everything. So they do deserve respect in any conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was a good group overall. I don't want to try to denigrate them at all. It's just I think that when you're talking about it, the 23 group, in my opinion, is the best group Texas has ever had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that includes Roy, BJ Sloan. I mean, look, Texas had two guys that would be long-term NFL guys and another guy that's going to make a roster.
Yeah. And two guys who scared that, well, you know what, out of the coordinators.
Yes. I mean, just different. I mean, LJ Humphrey has hung on the NFL for a long time. Colin Johnson did not. Devin Duvernay has held on a long time. They're clearly good players. The question is, are they in that same idea as others? And, for example, Devin Duvernay got taken over by Zay Flowers, his role, right, this year in Baltimore. Well, you know, frankly, Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell are both going to be expected to be wide receiver ones on their teams.
Yeah.
That's who they are and categorized as. So we'll see how it goes. All right, got a couple more questions. Hey, this one is interesting. Daniel Earp says, what about Lance Jackson as that alpha dog, Jerry? I mean, he certainly plays like he is that guy.
Yeah, look, so, and this is not a knock on, I mean, Pleasant Grove, great program. They do a great job, won a state title, have really good teams. And I say this to say this about, if Lance Jackson was playing at Duncanville or North Shore, he'd get a lot more attention nationally. That's just the reality of it.
Texarkana's kind of tucked away.
Tucked away up in Northeast Texas. Look, think about this. The only reason Lance Jackson started getting the attention nationally is because he went to the Under Armour camp in Houston and put every lineman on their back. Okay? he dominated so much he sprained his AC joint and missed half a baseball season. But that's the only reason he started getting a lot of national attention. If he was 6'6", 265, timing 4.59, 4.6, which he probably would have the day I was up there. We posted a video of that a long time ago, which I'll try to dig up. Maybe we can get that on a show Sunday night or something. He would be, if he was doing that at Duncanville or North Shore, you realize what people would be saying about him right now? There is a difference in recruiting. It is what it is. Now, he is you're talking height, weight, speed, toughness. I mean, we talk about Nick Townsend. Lance Jackson's exactly the same, except he's going to play defense. If Lance Jackson turned around and said, I want to be a tight end, he'd be a top three tight end in America. But he wants to go rush the passer and sack the quarterback and do all those things, which I think he's making a great decision. And pound for pound, one of the very best athletes in the country.
All right, I want to give y'all one last question here before we get going, but I do want to mention this. Guys, we are in the process right now of securing sponsors and advertisers for our football season programming. So if you own a business or are interested in advertising on Texas Football, send us an email at ontexasfootball@gmail.com. That's ontexasfootball@gmail.com. We're in the midst of getting that going and getting everybody on board and trying to make that happen for this football season. We have some great plans ahead. We're going to be more on site than ever before, which should be a lot of fun for everybody as well. Also, I want to mention, if you have a chance and haven't tried us yet, please give us a chance to earn your business at ontexasfootball.com. We have a subscription going on right now. It's a special. You get $20 off if you use the code OTFOG on texasfootball.com. It's an annual subscription, usually $59.95. We'll do it just for $39.95, $20 off when you use the code OTFOG. Jerry, you're going to be out and about. We talked about you going on the road today. We got some other news and notes coming up. CJ's been on the road. He was at Waco University last night as well. So I got a lot of news and notes coming. The June Elite Camp coming up, first thing off the list right now. All right, to finish this up, let's go to a little one that people are talking about, according to Odin Horns here. Podcasters saying SEC expansion, Kansas, Virginia, North Carolina, and.
So,
man, if they don't take Florida State in that group, they're dumb. I'm just going to tell you now. They'll fill the stadium to 80,000, 90,000 people.
Look, you know, I figured it would be Duke with North Carolina, but I was talking, I ran into a college basketball coach, talking to him a few days ago, and he actually thinks Duke will go Big East, which it makes sense. So does North Carolina, is it NC State that comes with North Carolina?
It needs to be Florida State, guys. If that's the case, and I'm not sure Kansas needs to be in it either, by the
way. Would it be Florida State or Miami?
If it's a football conference, okay? If it's a football conference, Virginia, North Carolina, maybe Virginia Tech and Florida State.
I mean, so is FSU and Miami going to go to the Big Ten? Is that what's going to happen? I mean, Miami already went Big East once, right? I mean, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean.
Miami's problem is that they don't even carry their own TV market. They don't have many fans. Diehards, but it's a huge market. And they have a legacy of being pretty good in football. And so you don't want to miss out if somebody by chance gets down there and starts dominating again, because there's so much talent in that.
Yeah.
So you don't want to miss, that run that they might have, because they've had that run before. So that's how that goes. All right, Jerry, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for everybody joining in. 1,000+ people, whether you're listening to us on podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever, or on YouTube or on Twitter nowadays. We appreciate you guys. Also, thanks to Austin Underground, Rick Vavro and his team, Manscaped, as well as the Stark family over at South Point Dodge. We appreciate them as well. That'll do it. We'll see you again tomorrow. We have some other stuff coming on. Jerry, you have anything you want to say before we get going?
No, I mean, we're almost 46,500 subscribers. Thank you to everybody for joining in every morning and continuing to pass the word. We're going to have a party at 50, and we're going to have a hell of a party at 100.
Hey, and happy birthday to a couple folks, too, that have birthdays today as well. All right, for Jerry Hamilton, I'm Bobby Burton. We'll see you tomorrow. Hook 'em.